Today, Tuesday, April 23, 2024, marks 200 days of the Israeli invasion of Gaza. Over 15,000 children have been killed. They are among the more than 34,000 Palestinians who have been killed by Israeli forces since October 7, 2023. Every university in Gaza has been destroyed, as well as thousand-year-old churches and mosques, libraries, museums, and hundreds of thousands of family homes. 1.5 million displaced Palestinians have fled from the north and central Gaza to the southernmost tip of the imprisoned coastal enclave, the city of Rafah. There, tent camps have been set up with makeshift materials, and Israeli forces continue nightly bombardment with U.S.-made F-16 and F-35 aircraft, as well as unmanned drones. At least 7,000 Palestinians have been abducted by Israeli forces since October 7th, adding to the over 4,000 already in Israeli detention. They are being held in horrific conditions, not allowed access to lawyers or a court system, and over 40 have died from being tortured to death in prison camps, including the Sde Tamen prison camp in southern Israel. Others who have managed to be released have shown before and after pictures from their months in captivity and all look like they have aged 10 years in the prison camps. Some Palestinians in the prison camps have had limbs amputated after being held in isolation with plastic wrist and ankle cuffs on 24/7 for weeks and months on end. Israeli authorities say this brutal invasion and decimation of the Gaza Strip is a response to the horrific attack on October 7th, in which 1,100 Israelis, including 700 civilians, were killed in a single day. But Israeli journalists have pointed out that the terrorist attack of October 7th was the pretext for the Israeli government to carry out a long-standing plan to invade the Gaza Strip to expel the Palestinian population, construct a seaport and colonial settlement, and exploit the natural gas reserves off the Gaza coast. In the past several months, in fact, the Israeli government has issued 3 exploratory permits for Israeli companies to begin exploiting the natural gas reserves off the Gaza coast. There were an estimated 240 Israelis taken hostage by Palestinian groups on October 7th. Over 100 were released in a well-publicized prisoner swap in the beginning of December, which many had hoped would lead to a permanent ceasefire. But Israeli bombardment continued unabated. On April 10th, negotiations for a ceasefire seemed close to reaching an agreement, with Palestinian leader Ismail Haniyeh of the political wing of the Hamas party talking through a third party in Qatar to negotiate a prisoner swap. But then Israeli planes bombed Haniyeh's family in Gaza, killing his 3 sons, Hazem, Amir, and Mohammed, and 4 grandchildren, 3 girls and a boy. Since then, negotiations have been stalled. This past week, student activism in the U.S. has really stepped up, following the decision by Columbia University in New York to bring in police to arrest 100 students holding an encampment for peace in Palestine. Thousands more students and supporters came to support the arrested students setting up a new encampment, and other universities are also organizing encampments in support of a permanent ceasefire and an end to the Israeli military occupation of Palestine, as well as the divestment of their schools from the Israeli military. These include New York University, Harvard University, the University of California at Berkeley, Sydney University in Australia, and Buenos Aires University in Argentina, as well as the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which has contracts with the Israeli military for weapon production. At McGill University in Montreal, Canada, 2 students are entering the critical stage of an open-ended hunger strike, calling for McGill to divest from companies contracted with the Israeli military. 2 students were hospitalized on day 33 and 34 of their respective hunger strikes. Now 2 other students have taken their place, continuing the open-ended hunger strike for Gaza. Both are reaching 30 days of hunger strike. I spoke with Blue, a student organizer in Montreal, about the student hunger strike.
We're seeing, I think a lot of the universities are kind of globally and across like Turtle Island are in very like similar wavelengths of like, you know, trying to go through like motions, passing motions. having like lots of teach-ins, getting people educated, and trying to mobilize people through rallies, through protests, and yeah, try to go through like McGill administration. Maybe I can touch on this later, loves to say, go through the channels, the proper channels for divestment. You know, you go through this long, lengthy process of like, that is really complicated, and it's intentional that it's complicated, to request divestment. Maybe they'll listen to you. Maybe they'll listen to you. And so people have been mobilizing and gathering and starting groups and joining groups, focusing, trying to like centralize, okay, like how are we complicit? Like, because everyone in the world is complicit right now through our financial ties, whether it's through institutions or through our tax dollars. We're all have been forcibly complicit in the funding of the Israeli military through our money and through our governments. And so we have, I think the idea mostly for university students is like, just okay, so these, you know, we go to these institutions and they're like colonial institutions, and they've consistently and historically caused like so much damage in the local indigenous communities and in Palestine and in other places, and have historically been involved in, like, for example, McGill, the South African apartheid. And so the point is, with mobilization right now, is trying to get our universities to either A and or do an academic boycott of Israeli institutions and to divest. So basically following the BDS model that everyone, that has been really powerful. I think that we're all witnessing the power of BDS. So BDS means boycott, divest, sanction. And it's basically, like I was mentioning before, like what we pay into, and where our money goes is, if we look at the research, and if we look at the research done in BDS, it will always link it back to what maybe this company is either on occupied, like illegal, like a settlement, or the money of this company, they send like millions to weapon manufacturing companies that directly go to the Israeli army, that could directly arm the Israeli army. So the point is of BDS is that like our money ties back to Israel, and our money ties back to weapon manufacturing companies. And a lot of these, what we're witnessing is a lot of these companies and universities, like, why are universities invested in weapon manufacturing companies? That's what we'd all like to know. No one has answered that to us yet. But that's the point of BDS, is that our money is linked back to funding the IDF. And if we can cut off money from that, that is a way that we can not arm and fund this genocidal occupational force. So it's one tactic through money. We thought it would, you know, given that we're on hunger strike, maybe people would care, maybe they'd listen. So that was the request. And it started with two indefinite hunger strikers, and I would say about 12 rotating hunger strikers. So people in the McGill or extended community. I also started off as like a rotating. It's very bare minimum. It's 2 days a week. Just as like, I guess to support, and so people go from like 2 days to 6 days a week, but like people were hunger striking. And then 34 days in, we had Rania, who was hospitalized. And then 36 days into his hunger strike, and he started a little later because he has, he started a little later. Shadi was hospitalized. So we had two students hospitalized, and different people starting indefinite at different points. And just as a whole, this has been happening for 61 days. You know, I've never participated in a hunger strike before, and there's a need for like support. There's a lot of logistical planning and organizing that goes around into this, and like caretaking, and like, you know, making sure our, the people that we're working with and that we love deeply, like, don't die on hunger strike, and that we can find ways that that our message can get across and that people know that this is happening.
And so you said the two people went to the hospital, Rania and was it Shadi?
Yeah, Shadi.
So what's happened to them since?
when Rania was hospitalized, there was a big media outburst. And what we've kind of been discussing is how reactionary the media is, and how we were kind of only really taken seriously right when, you know, Rania's life was like actually at extreme risk. And so they have been, she has stepped, she's been hospitalized and then was in the hospital for, I want to say, 5 to 6 days. And she's recovering right now. Like, she's recovering. It's extremely traumatizing, everything that has happened. It's extremely like vulnerable, and to have like your body and your health, like your hospitalization, it really so personal, like just broadcasted to the media and then just kind of forgotten about. It's been extremely, I think a lot of us are seeing how desensitized and numb and apathetic, like how much that runs within like Western culture. Because here we are, like, but it's beyond even the 6 months of genocide. This has been happening for 76 years, but we are just seeing, I think a lot of people are waking up to how numb that people are, that this can take place. And I think in a personal experience, like seeing that, you know, people can like see that, especially the administration, I want to say specifically, because the administration, that they can see that your students are willing to quite literally die. I hate saying that, but people die on hunger strike, and we're 61 days in, we're two hospitalizations in, and we've had like a bare minimum median. There's been no actions taken into caring about their students' well-being, and that is like, there's no words for that. There's like, it's harm beyond, there's no words for that. So to just see how there's been so little even care, other than like lip service and fake, oh, that's bad, or, you know, from a distance over email, oh no, don't hunger strike, that's too bad. It's really disgusting to see how robotic the administration and people have been. And it's not, it's, we don't want to hunger, we don't want to like center the hunger strikes suffering. Like, I think people have been very clear, they don't want to center themselves, because this is a choice, and it's to bring attention to what is happening in Palestine right now. But the fact that, you know, you'd think, just because maybe it's a little closer to home, you'd think like people in the West would care a little more. I don't want to say people, because I know a lot of people care. I don't want to say people, but it's just been really frustrating seeing that the administration cannot even care. They don't care about the 40,000 Palestinian people that have been murdered, and they very much do not care about their own students. And we were naive enough to think that they would care. Why do we get to, like, at school, like, why do we get to I took a semester off. I could not understand how every day I would go into class and we're just pretending that our tuition money is not going to bomb universities and murder teachers and students. Like, my brain cannot, and I don't think anyone's brain can understand how life is continuing. And I think of Samar Al-Qudour, a woman, a Palestinian mother whose daughter died in Gaza recently, and waiting to come over to Canada, so-called Canada, to her mother, and died. And every single day, and if anyone's listening, I would love for people to like go check her out. Samar Al-Qudour in Montreal, if you type in Mark Miller, every single day while she's grieving her daughter who was murdered, she's outside protesting outside of Mark Miller's office. Every single day, there has been no space for grief or healing for any Palestinian person who has lost their family. There is literally no space or time. Like, they are not given the privilege of time to grieve. And Samar is outside his office every single day protesting. And to me, that's like, there's nothing else to do. I don't know how else to function. I don't know. I really don't know how else to function. Everything's the bare minimum. I want everyone to be doing something. I didn't know how to do a hunger strike. I don't know how to do any of this. I think it's all the bare minimum, and we have to work together collectively and really truly reimagine, like, we can't exist like this. We can't exist like this, because it's just because it's somewhere else, it's our governments are doing this and we're all complicit. There's no other way. Yeah, there's no, it's not really inspiration. It's like, it's rage. It's not knowing how else to function is how I feel about this. And I do feel like it is the bare minimum that we can be doing.
That was Blue, a student organizer in Montreal, Canada, where students from McGill University are on an open-ended hunger strike to demand that their university divest from Israeli military investments. More information can be found on the Instagram profile, McGill Hunger Strike. That's MCGILL Hunger Strike. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Jenka Soderberg.